I believe in Mount Calvary. How about you? What a wonderful song. Appreciate the wonderful way that you sang it and encouraged me and one another, lifted that song up to God in the way that you did. Thank you for being here this morning, especially if you're visiting with us. We have several visitors among us. We're glad that you're here. And we hope that your time together with us this morning will bring you closer to the God who loved you and gave His Son so that you could live forever. I saw a Peanuts cartoon a while back, Peppermint Patty talking to Charlie Brown. She says, "Guess what, Chuck? First day of school and I got sent into the principal's office. And it was your fault, Chuck." Charlie Brown responds and says, "My fault? How could it be my fault? Why do you say that everything is my fault?" To which she declares, "Well, you're my friend, aren't you, Chuck? You should have been a better influence on me." We all need good influences in our lives to help us be the best people that we can be and honor our God in the way that He deserves to be honored. You can't really have too much good influence, can you? Anybody ever thought to themselves, "I've just got too many good influences in my life"? That's just not a thought that probably ever crosses in your mind. Have you ever said to anybody, "That's your problem. You know what your problem is? Your problem is you've got too much good influence." You ever said that to somebody? I doubt it. You ever told somebody, "Your peers encourage you too much. Your friends are always trying to get you to do the right thing. They always have the finest qualities and they encourage you to be the best that you can be. And maybe your husband, he's just the best at getting you to be the best that you can be as a wife." Or maybe you say to the wife, "Well, your husband just inspires you to be a better person all the time. And it's just entirely too much. You're just going to have to stop that." You ever told somebody, "Well, you know what your problem is? Your friends are too compassionate, too kind, too merciful, too generous, too helpful, too considerate, too forgiving, too thoughtful, too caring." We never say those kinds of things, do we? You understand you can't get too much of this good thing, good influence. And you can't be too much of this good thing, good influence. Lesson this morning is simply this question: who have you changed for good? There's a line in the song from a popular musical that goes like this: "Who can say if I've been changed for the better? But because I knew you, I have been changed for good." Who could say that even about you? That because they knew you, they've been changed for the good. I like the double entendre of that particular quote because it's asking two things, really. Who have you changed permanently? And then who have you changed for the good in the sense of better? You can use the word good in both ways. And it's really asking both questions. Who have you changed in a permanent way, in a lasting way? And who have you changed to be a better person for the good in that way? Romans chapter 14 and verse 7, the Apostle Paul says that none of us lives to himself and no one dies to himself. You can't live in this life without changing others. We're all connected to one another. As the English poet John Donne wrote, "No man is an island, tire of itself. Each man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main." We are all somehow connected. And if you can imagine a continent connected together by clods of dirt, if you will, and Don went on in that poem to talk about how if one clod of dirt falls into the sea, then the entire continent has been affected by that. We all influence and affect one another. There are a lot of Bible examples of this, of course, and I want to share a couple of them with you this morning from 2 Kings. Go with me to 2 Kings chapter 5. And you remember the story of Naaman, who was an officer in the Syrian army. But he was a leper. 2 Kings chapter 5. On one occasion, the Syrians raided Israel and they brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel. And she became a servant in the house of Naaman. In chapter 5 and verse 3 of 2 Kings, she said to her mistress, "If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy." This one comment by this young girl is going to be something that changes this man's life for good, permanently. Just this one little comment. She cares enough about her master's well-being that she mentions, just almost in passing, that there's a prophet in Israel who could heal my master's leprosy. And of course, we probably know the story. Naaman goes to the king of Syria, gets a letter from him to go to the king of Israel to see about getting his leprosy healed. And he takes that letter to the king of Israel, and the king of Israel says, "Am I God that I can heal your leprosy? Your king is just trying to pick a fight with me. He's trying to cause a quarrel." Elisha hears of it, and he sends a messenger and says, "Send him to me, that he may know that there is a prophet in Israel." And so Naaman goes, chapter 5 and verse 10, and he comes to the house of Elisha, and again, probably most all of us know the story. Elisha doesn't really even come out. He sends a messenger and tells him, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you shall be clean." But Naaman became furious, and he went away and said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy." I might say here in passing that Naaman has a number of problems. One of them is his expectation of what God should do. And a lot of times when people have an expectation or a prejudice of what God should do, then it prevents them from receiving what God will do. And it almost does that for Naaman. Because his idea of what God is going to do through this prophet is a lot different from God's idea about what he's going to do through this prophet and how he's going to heal Naaman. Naaman says, "Are not the rivers of Syria better than the Jordan, the Abana, and the Pharpar? I could go and wash in them and be cleaner," he thinks. And he is angry. And he's fixing to just go back home. The text tells us, 2 Kings chapter 5, in verse 13, that his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you have done it?" You know, if the prophet had said, "Oh, go slay a dragon," or go do some great deed of some sort in battle, would you have done that? And so they reason with him, and they say, "How much more when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored. The point I want you to notice as far as our lesson this morning is concerned is that servant girl and these servants who are with him here make all the difference in Naaman's life. It is their influence, their words of wisdom at just the right time, saying to him in to do something, encouraging him to do the right thing when he's angry, made all he would otherwise have lived his entire rest of his life as a leper. But his servants changed his life with their simple influence. And then go over to 2 Kings chapter 7. Samaria, the capital city of the northern kingdom, is being besieged by the Syrians on this occasion. And the text tells us in 2 Kings chapter 7 and verse 3 that there were four leprous men at the gate, at the entrance of the gate, and they said to one another, "Why are we sitting here until we die?" The Syrian army is surrounding Samaria. In Samaria, in the city, people are starving to death. You've got these four lepers that are sitting in the gate, and they're saying to each other, "What are we doing here? If we say we will enter the city, the famine is in the city, and we'll die there. If we said here, we'll die also. Now therefore come, let us surrender to the army of the Syrians. If they keep us alive, we shall live, and if they kill us, we shall only die." And I'm going to tell you what, that's some pretty clear-headed thinking. I mean, if you're in, you know, this place where it's a no-win, and the only hope is to go out and surrender to the army, they see that. And the thing is, they encourage one another. They talk among themselves. If we stay here, we're going to die. If we go in the city, we're going to die. We might as well just go out and surrender. Maybe they'll keep us alive. If they kill us, we're going to be dead anyway. So, no big deal. So that's what they do. They go out and surrender. Except there's nobody to surrender to. They go at evening into the camp of the Syrians. And God has caused them, the Syrians, to hear as if it were armies coming. The sound of horses and all of that. And so they flee for the hills. They leave their camp. They leave everything in it. And there's nobody in the camp. They're looking for somebody to surrender to. Holding their hands up, waving the white flag, whatever they were doing. And they can't find anybody. And they start going in the tents. And they find food, and they find clothes, and they find all of this spoil. And they're just enjoying themselves, I think. And then you come to 2 Kings chapter 7 and verse 9. And again, they said to one another, "We are not doing what is right. This day is a day of good news, and we remain silent. If we wait until the morning light, some punishment will come down upon us. Now therefore come, let us go and tell the king's household." And again, what I'm trying to show you is the influence that they had on one another. The influence on one another to go out and surrender to the Syrians. The influence that, you know, we're not doing the right thing here. Have you ever been with a group of friends and you just realize, hey, this isn't right what we're doing. And somebody says that and then all of a sudden you stop because you're not doing the right thing. Just because somebody has the courage and the sense to say, "We're not doing the right thing here." And somebody else says, "You know what, you're right. This isn't right." What simple yet great lessons about the power of influence. And I think we could go all through the Scriptures, probably chapter after chapter, in many of the historical books, and find samples of influence in a good way. Changing others for good involves some very simple things. It involves, first of all, simply accepting the responsibility to be an influence. Christians are supposed to make others better. You're supposed to be a positive influence in the lives of those you touch. What does Jesus mean in Matthew 5 and verse 13? "You are the salt of the earth." You are. You are the salt of the earth. You should change everything that comes in contact with you. You should make a difference in this world. What are you doing to change for good the lives of those who come in contact with you? In Romans chapter 15 and verse 2, Paul says, "Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification." We should be concerned about building up those that we come in contact with, those who are our neighbors. And of course, Jesus was one time asked, "Who is my neighbor?" And it winds up that your neighbor is the person who needs you. And anybody who comes in contact with you needs to be a better person. We all need to be better people. You need to accept that responsibility. This is not optional if you're a Christian. This is not something you say, "Well, you know, that's just a suggestion." No, it's not. You are the light of the world if you're a disciple of Christ. Romans 15:2. As the force of a commandment. Accept that responsibility. Say and do the right things at the right time. That's what we saw in the examples we saw in 2 Kings chapters 5 and 7. People just saying the right thing at the right time. Proverbs 15 and verse 22. "Without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is." As you're with friends, family, companions, people that you company with and have association with day after day at work or wherever it is, there's a time to say something that can make a difference in somebody's life and their behavior and their attitude. Proverbs 15 and verse 23. "A man finds joy in giving an apt reply." And how good is a timely word in the New International Version. Now sometimes a timely word involves saying something that might hurt somebody's feelings momentarily. Proverbs 27 and verse 6 alludes to that sort of thing when it says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Sometimes a friend is going to say something to you that just might hurt your feelings, prick your heart, but it could be just the thing that you need to hear. And you can be the one that says that kind of thing. You can be the one who makes that statement if you just have the courage and the sense and the wisdom to do so. And then sometimes you just need to say something that makes somebody feel better about themselves, about their situation, about their ability to overcome problems that they're facing. Proverbs 27 and verse 9, "Ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel." I'm not a perfume wearer. I'm like Jimmy Stewart said one time a long time ago, an old black and white movie, I think it was, "I'm a soap and water man." But I have had the experience of being in a room with someone who was wearing sweet-smelling perfume. And if it was really good-smelling perfume, you know how that is. You sit there, you take a deep breath, and you just feel better all over. You can be that kind of influence in a person's life. That sweet ointment and perfume that delight the heart. You can be the kind of person, Proverbs 27 and verse 17, "As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend." You can be the kind of person that makes your friends sharper, stronger, and better. Say the right thing at the right time, whether it hurts or whether it's soothing, whether it's anything in between. The main thing you have to do all of this is to think about how to help someone change for the good. The problem is that for most people, most of their thoughts are about themselves. We are so self-concerned. We think, does that person not realize how what they are doing is affecting me? Don't they see what that's doing to me? That's our thought process so much of the time. And I invite you and implore you to turn that around. And as you interact with people day by day, think first, how is what I am saying, how is what I am doing affecting them? What effect is this going to have on somebody else? Jesus told us that if we want to follow Him, we have to deny ourselves. Life's not about yourself anymore if you're a follower of Jesus Christ. And the thought process has to be, how can I help this person? How are my actions and my words and even my attitudes going to affect them? Whether it's at work, in the family, school, wherever, in the church. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 24. Let us consider one another. Simple words. It's very simple, isn't it? Let us consider one another. To provoke unto love and good works. To make each other better. Think about the other person. Now the thing is, instead of changing others for the better, too much of the time we change others for the worse. There are a lot of good influences in this congregation, but in this world there are a lot of evil ones. And we need to be cautious and careful that we ourselves are not evil influences. We need to realize that it's possible that we can alter the very purpose of a person's life by something that we say or do or encourage them to say or do. At the Tower of Babel in Genesis chapter 11, the people said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had brick for stone and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, "Come and let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves that we may be scattered abroad over the face of the whole, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Here these people are encouraging one another to do something God didn't want them to do, to focus on themselves and their own glory and acclaim. They were trying to turn the whole purpose of their life into something that was about them and something instead of something that was about God and His will and His glory. And they encouraged one another in that way. You can alter a person's religion or their moral standards by the wrong kind of encouragement. In 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 4, when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God. You can change a person's belief system. Galatians chapter 5. One of the Galatians apparently had hindered people from obeying the truth by getting them to believe in error. Paul says in verse 7 of Galatians 5, "You ran well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? This persuasion does not come from him who calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump." It's amazing how much just a little bit of influence, just one person, how much influence that one person can have, not only for good, but also for ill. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. The Lord takes a dim view of those who change others for the worse. A very dim view. Let me read some passages here. Deuteronomy chapter 13, in verse 6. "If your brother, the son of your mother, your son or daughter, the wife of your bosom or your friend who is as your own soul, secretly entices you, saying, 'Let us go and serve other gods which you have not known, neither you or your fathers, of the gods of the people which are all around you, near to you or far off from you, from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth,' you shall not consent to him or listen to him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him or conceal him, but you shall surely kill him." Kill him for what? What was the law in the Old Testament? Kill him for what? Being a bad influence. That's what. "You shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people. And you shall stone him with stones until he dies, because he sought to entice you away from the Lord your God." In Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 10, the wise man says, "Whoever causes the upright to go astray in an evil way, he himself will fall into his own pit." Jesus said in Mark chapter 9 and verse 42, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to stumble, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea." You lead somebody down the wrong path, you encourage, influence somebody to do something they're not supposed to be doing. Jesus said it would be better for you just to hang this ton millstone around your neck and toss you in the ocean, because your eternal destiny is going to be far worse than that. Practically speaking, each one should ask ourselves things like this. Do I have friends who curse more freely because of my influence, either because I have cursed in their presence or I have not said something about that to them when they have cursed? Do I have friends who drink alcohol and do so more freely because of my influence? Have I encouraged others to be careless about spiritual things such as Bible study and prayer and worship because of my example, because of the way I behave in a Bible class? What effect are you having on others? What effect are they having on you? Are my friends better because they've known me? Are your friends better because they've known you? My life shall touch a dozen lives before this day is done, leave countless marks for good or ill, ere sets the evening sun. This is the wish I always wish, the prayer I always pray. Lord, may my life bless every life that touches mine today. Our plea is that you would be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. That you would make a difference in this world for good to all who come in contact with your life. We'll sing a song in just a moment that will encourage you to take a step to the cross, only a step, to name the name of Jesus. Changing others for good starts by letting God change you for good by the power of the cross. I believe in a hill called Mount Calvary. And I believe whatever the cost, I believe that it still has the power to change lives today. For it changed me completely. And changed you too. The power of the cross. We'd ask you to come while we stand and while we sing.